It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, special political programming, Wisconsin Life Turns 11, and a celebration of Black History Month. We'll get those and other items during this month's edition of Mondays with Mike. First, one of country music's top stars is facing consequences after he was filmed using a racial slur. Morgan Wallen, whose latest album had spent the last 3 weeks at the top of the Billboard chart, had his record deal suspended, his songs pulled from several major radio outlets, and was called out by some fellow country artists. Wallen apologized for his language. There was a sharp drop in airplay since the incident, but Billboard reports that sales of his music are up more than 300%. Two country fans and journalists join us now. They each wrote on the website Medium about the topic, saying it's time for the industry to break its pattern of excusing racist behavior and that it could connect with a much wider fan base in the process. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're following this, if you're a country fan, what do you think of the music industry's response to the Morgan Wallen incident? Have you worried that the genre feels unwelcoming to would-be fans because of their race? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Marcus K. Dowling is a freelance journalist covering country music. Marcus, welcome to Central Time. And Jeremy Helliger is a journalist covering entertainment and politics, and an author whose books include Storms in Africa, A Year in the Motherland. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Well, Jeremy, let's start with you. You write that you love country music. Before we get into this particular Morgan Wallen incident, you feel like you are treated as an outsider. You don't look like people expect country music fans to look. Can you share some of that experience with us?
Well, I think it's the fact that I'm Black, and when people see me, they probably expect me to like R&B and rap music, which I do, but I also grew up with country music. And, you know, I've done a lot of interviews with country music singers, and I've covered country music, and I have had the reaction from people who treated me like I was kind of an anomaly. It's not so much that they don't allow me to feel welcome, but it's sort of like you always feel a little bit othered because they don't expect you to look like you do and be a country music fan.
And Marcus, looking at this Morgan Wallen incident now, you say that in the past, the country music industry has taken the attitude of, we're not going to stand in the way of a hit. Bad behavior from an artist, especially a white male artist, even if it involves race, we're not going to let that stop us from selling albums and playing records. You're hoping it's different this time. Can you talk about that? I'm not hearing Marcus. We'll see. We're going to get him on another connection. Jeremy, let's throw that to you. What do you think of what you've seen in the music industry, the country music world, in response to this rising star really using a slur?
Well, I think it's interesting because you've had some artists like Mickey Gorton and Maren Morris who have come out and condemned his actions. And they've said that, you know, it's not the first time he's used that slur.
Now I think we've lost Jeremy. Not sure what's going on. Marcus, I think I heard you in the background. Are you there?
Yeah, no problem. I'm right here. So,
excellent.
Insofar as everything since June, so right around the time of the George Floyd incident in Minneapolis, everything that transpired nationally, it impacted country music in the sense that country has traditionally been seen stereotypically as largely a white fan base dominated and white artist dominated genre, almost to a level of near racist proportions. Of course, there's artists like Linda Martell and Charlie Pride, who are historically Black artists who have had success in country music, but they are not representative of the full scope of the genre, of course. But what happened with everything that happened since June, leading into in October, when at the Country Music Awards, Maren Morris named six female African-American artists as impactful in her career. And then in December, when Charlie Pride passed away, that really kind of crystallized the moment for country music and also for African-Americans who are fans of and work within the genre to feel that something needed to change, because just the mood and the gravitas of the moment had changed nationally and also within country. So it set a tripwire that essentially if anyone were to engage in or make racist statements or engage in racist behavior, that what would occur is something that would be swift and immediately reactionary, because the time had come to have a reckoning and have a deeper conversation about race.
And Marcus, I think there's an attitude sometimes when we see some of the new artists you were just talking about making breakthroughs in the country music industry, like, aha, now it's the time for black artists. They're finally making inroads in country. You wrote a piece last year that said, in effect, don't call it a breakthrough. They've been here for years. A long history of black musicians, pre-country, in country. They just aren't necessarily recognized by country.
Oh, absolutely. So I think that there's always been a space for black artists in country music. It's been more of a regionalized and less hyped involvement from the mainstream level. But with the advent of streaming, especially with Spotify, the fan base that has come towards country is coming towards country race and genre agnostic. So they are just listening to music for the sake of good music. And then when you listen to so much of country music that is influenced by trap and other hip-hop elements and other rhythm and blues elements, you kind of get this cross-genre slurry effect of sorts that allows for more African-American artists to have an opportunity and for a certain level of equity to exist within the genre. And when it comes to what happened with Morgan Wallen, his sound is influenced by that same sound. So when you're a white artist and you're using black-derived and black-innovated sounds within a genre that has a traditional white fan base but now has a broader potential, then a perfect storm of sorts exists.
And Jeremy, you wrote in your piece on this topic that country music has a history of forgiving some kinds of comments and content and not others. And you see it as kind of a political thing. If you are outspoken on the left politically, you're more likely to be excluded from the country music world. Can you talk about what you've seen over the years?
Well, I think that's because country music is a very conservative genre. It sort of upholds those very conservative values. So Natalie Maines from Dixie Chicks goes on stage in London and criticizes a Republican president, Dixie Chicks end up getting canceled. And, you know, when that happened, it wasn't surprising to me, because I don't think it's so much that you can't be political and be country, but you sort of have to be on the right side of the fence. I remember when Barack Obama was president, Hank Williams Jr., as I mentioned in my piece, said a lot of things negative about Barack Obama, about how he hates hunting and he loves gays and we hate him. And he got away with it. You know, there was a little bit of hoopla, but Hank Williams Jr. didn't really catch a lot of heat for that, because I think he's sort of preaching to the choir, so to speak. And so it's not so much that you can't be political in country music, but you have to be careful what kind of politics you support.
We're talking to Marcus Dowling and Jeremy Helliger, journalists covering, among other things, country music, talking about how the industry is reacting to singer Morgan Wallen's use of a racial slur and how country could welcome a more diverse group of fans and artists. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think country music has the potential to reach a wider audience? If you're a country fan, do you ever feel like the genre seems unwelcoming to people who aren't white? Do you feel like an outsider sometimes as a country fan? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're coming in with Mickey Guyton there, her song Heaven Down Here. We're talking about the world of country music. Jeremy Helliger and Marcus Dowling are with us, journalists and fans of the genre, looking at how the industry can be more welcoming to black artists and fans after high-profile singer Morgan Wallen was filmed using a racial slur last week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Your thoughts on the story, maybe your experiences in the world of country music. Can we talk some about artists maybe making breakthroughs now, black artists in country music where they wouldn't have been allowed more high-profile spots? Jeremy, let's throw this at you. Who are you watching?
Well, I think, you know, right now you have, of course, Darius Rucker, who has had a lot of success in country music. Of course, he's probably better known to pop audiences as the lead singer for Hootie and the Blowfish in the 90s. So he sort of had a leg up on the competition because of that. And you also have Kane Brown and Jimmy Allen and, of course, Mickey Guyton. So we've come a long way from when I was growing up in the 70s listening to Charlie Pride. But I think that the Morgan Wallen incident illustrates that there's still an undercurrent that's kind of hiding in plain sight that's sort of holding country music back.
And Marcus, do you see Nashville and the industry itself saying, okay, yes, there's a black country artist, we're going to promote them, we're going to get them on the radio to the extent they would a comparable white artist?
I'd say that there's a definite dichotomy in the sense that radio is a different animal than video and other manners of gaining mainstream access for artists. I do a lot of work with country music television as well, and recently CMT has done a phenomenal job. And I'm not saying that as a corporate show in any way. I'm saying that because of brass tacks facts. They've been able to platform a greater number of African-American artists just based off of merit alone. As well, with radio, the issue is that radio is traditionally a spot of comfort for a lot of people who live in flyover states and a lot of people in the Deep South. Unfortunately, a lot of those people are not African-American who are listeners to country music radio. Country music radio is around 70-75% of a white listener base. So they like to hear voices that feel familiar to their surroundings. And they like to hear songs that are familiar to their surroundings. Currently in the African-American listener pool or rather an artist pool, there's a great number of songs that are reflective of a greater deal of more, for lack of a better term, revolutionary fervor, in the sense that people are pushing for progression and civil rights awareness and LGBTQ rights awareness, for instance. And that's something that isn't necessarily going to play well on radio. So you get this lovely dichotomy occurring in Nashville that offers unparalleled potential for the positive progression of this conversation.
Let's bring on a caller now. Dan is with us in Green Bay. Dan, hello.
Hi. I'm a little concerned that this doesn't sound racist in any way, shape, or form, but I was just concentrating, do you think, the lack of African-American artists in country, you know, if I think of other genres, so is this a genre-based or is it just the, I don't know how I'm trying to ask this, but because if you look at other genres like hip-hop or rap, you don't see a lot of white artists and kind of vice versa across different genres. So my question, I guess, is this a genre thing or just the people that are in that specific genre?
Dan, thanks for the call. I don't know, Marcus.
Can I jump in?
Sure, go ahead.
Totally. So the main issue here is fascinating when it comes to black artists and country music, is that going back to the days of even Solomon Burke in the early 1960s, there's been an exclusion of black artists from having opportunities to even perform in country music. Solomon Burke's first number one single is a country song. It's a Gene Autry cover. And soon thereafter, because it's very difficult in the 1960s to put black artists on country radio even then, he becomes one of the greatest R&B singers of all time. Al Green did covers of country songs. He covered Willie Nelson. He covered Chris Christopherson, all of that. So there's a historical space where country uniquely has found a way to exclude black artists who have then gone on to other musical spaces and had legendary careers that could have easily have been country careers. Easily.
And Jeremy, as I hear the question too, I think of in the genre of rap, you had the Beastie Boys, Vanilla Ice, Eminem, like being, I think, much more welcomed into those genres than the reverse in country. Is that fair, do you think, to say?
Absolutely. Let's not forget that the first female rapper to have a number one single on Billboard's Hot 100 was a white woman from Australia, Iggy Azalea. You know, artists like Justin Timberlake, Justin Bieber, Blue Eyed Soul is an entire industry. I think that whites have been very widely accepted. You know, some people will say that a lot of white artists pillage hip hop for commercial favor in order to be commercially successful. So I don't think that white artists have been excluded from hip hop and even rap. Years ago, about 8 years ago, Macklemore and Lewis won a rap duo, won the Best New Artist Grammy over Kendrick Lamar. So I don't think that white artists have been excluded to the same degree that blacks have been excluded from country music.
Marcus, we just have a few moments left. You like country music. I think you're hoping to see these walls break down a little bit. Can you tell us why?
Well, I think that there's a, if we talk about the great need for reparational therapy for America writ large, one of the easiest spaces in which to achieve it, the quickest and with the most significant potential is in country music. The singers and songwriters are there. The historical lineage is there, going through every single musical genre you can imagine. Gospel, blues, R&B, soul, folk, Americana, all has a black root. And being able to open the door to artists that have been historically banished, for lack of a better term, from this space, it just all makes sense. And I think that for a musical crossover, on a musical level, it is logical. And then on a societal level, it's the most impactful of spaces in which to do it.
Marcus, thanks for joining us today.
You're absolutely welcome. Anytime.
Jeremy, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
We've been talking to Marcus Dowling and Jeremy Helliger. They're journalists who cover, among other things, country music. They join us to talk about how the country industry is reacting to a top star, Morgan Wallen, being filmed using a racial slur, and what the genre can do to welcome more diverse fans and artists. In 2020, social justice advocates called for major police reforms. But in Wisconsin, they've come up against a system where police departments are insulated in some ways from accountability by design. As Corrine Hess reports, it's been that way for more than 100 years.
Since summer, social justice marchers have called for systemic changes in police departments. In October, this group in the Milwaukee suburb of Wauwatosa called for the firing of an officer who killed three people of color there in 5 years. Protesters and community members told Mayor Dennis McBride that he needs to make bold changes.
People insisted over and over again that I fire Officer Mensa and I fire the police chief and I do this and I do that. And I would say to them, I don't have that authority under Wisconsin law.
Under state law, mayors don't hire and fire police chiefs, and they can't discipline rank-and-file members of police departments. That authority rests with volunteer citizen boards known as police and fire commissions. The system is designed to protect law enforcement from political meddling. It keeps a corrupt mayor from being able to put pressure on a police chief. But it also means when there's a bad cop or a bad chief, the mayor or city council can't step in. David Kennedy is a criminologist with John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. He says citizen oversight boards date back more than 120 years in some cities, but in practice, he says,
that essentially ensures that lack of accountability.
Over the last year, the lack of accountability has been visibly frustrating for Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. In early 2020, a Milwaukee police officer was charged with first-degree reckless homicide after using a chokehold on a man during a fight at his home. Barrett called for his resignation. Instead, the officer was placed on paid leave by the city's police chief. The officer later resigned and is awaiting trial. Milwaukee's police chief was eventually demoted and later resigned. That move was also contentious, and the former chief is preparing to sue the city. Milwaukee's Fire and Police Commission has been deadlocked on hiring a new police chief. Barrett says state law needs to be changed to give mayors more power.
Whether it's me or not, they can wait. They can wait till the next mayor, as far as I'm concerned. I think you do have to have a police chief that's accountable to the elected officials.
In Wauwatosa, McBride's handling of the Black Lives Matter protests and the police department have made him enemies with both groups. Last month, PowerPoint slides created by members of the police department and first reported by the Wisconsin Examiner named McBride as a high-value target. As mayor, McBride can't call for disciplinary action, but he can file charges with the Police and Fire Commission.
Any member of the community who feels that he or she has been mistreated by any police department can file charges.
Meanwhile, McBride doesn't have much confidence that the Republican-led state legislature will change state law to give more power to mayors, but he does have an idea for reform. He says police and fire chiefs should be limited to 10-year terms. He compared it to judges who have to run for re-election every 10 years. In Wisconsin, sheriffs also have to run for re-election every 4 years.
A 10-year term with perhaps an opportunity for an additional 10-year term. That would be some sort of a break on a chief who may not feel entirely accountable to the Police and Fire Commission, or certainly to the elected officials.
State Senator Van Wongard is a Republican from Racine who used to be a cop. He also chairs the Senate's Public Safety Committee. Wongard didn't respond to requests for comments, but he has introduced several police reform bills, including one that would increase community involvement in Milwaukee and Madison's Police and Fire Commissions. At the time, he said, most law enforcement officers do an outstanding job, but increasing accountability and transparency will increase trust. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, we'll get the latest on Wisconsin Public Radio programming and operations with WPR Director Mike Crane. It's this month's edition of Mondays with Mike. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent continues a series of interviews with candidates for the state's top education job leading up to next week's primary election. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Right now it's time for the February edition of Mondays with Mike. Each month, WPR Director Mike Crane stops by either Central Time, The Larry Mueller Show, or The Morning Show to talk about what's happening on and off the air. This time, we'll take a look at some special political programming. We'll also mark Black History Month, celebrate a milestone for Wisconsin life, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your comments, questions, and suggestions. Let us know if there's a particular show or type of show you want to hear on WPR, something you want to hear less of. Do you have questions or thoughts about WPR.org or the WPR app? And on this anniversary, do you have a favorite Wisconsin life memory you'd like to share? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Mike Crane, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here.
Let's start off with that milestone. Wisconsin life seems like only yesterday, Mike. 10 years old now. You can hear it every Monday and Wednesday here on Central Time. Share a little bit of that history with us, Mike.
Oh, you know, one of the things I'm remembering is that when Ann Strainchaps, the original producer of Wisconsin Life was talking at one of the events we held about it. She said that finding stories for Wisconsin Life would be like dipping a spoon in a lake. There are so many remarkable people in our state, and that has been true. More than 1,000 features so far. And, boy, it's hard to pick an absolute favorite, but I know right up there is one that was on a long time ago and actually ended up being made into a wonderful animation by our partners at PBS Wisconsin, and that was the Big Mama story. There was another one about, remarkable card games they play in Wisconsin, Sheep's Head being the one that it was focused on in particular. And I know we're going to hear something from the original Ice Week coming up, so lots of great stuff. And Wisconsin Life's executive producer, Maureen McCollum, is selecting some of the favorites from those 10 years to be heard over the course of this next year.
And Wisconsin Life also helped launch Wisconsin, which has been a part of our programming in the news department, here on the talk shows, and more. So, you know, we come up with new stuff sometimes, Mike.
That's right. And, in fact, speaking of new stuff, the Wisconsin folks have come up with a new weekly e-newsletter that will keep you up to date on the rollout of the coronavirus vaccines in Wisconsin and answering listeners' crucial questions. It's easy to sign up at wpr.org/coronavirus.
Talking to Mike Crane, WPR director. It's this month's edition of Mondays with Mike. You can join in with your comments and questions about Wisconsin Public Radio at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Mike, we have some special political coverage on the Ideas Network this month, partly to coincide with a change of presidential administration. What's going on?
That's right. There's a national call-in series we're picking up that's going to be on the Ideas Network here at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. And the question is, America, are we ready? And it's about Biden's first 100 days and what you all think about it and what people all around the country think. So that's, again, Thursdays here on the Ideas Network at 7 p.m.
And then, of course, the Senate impeachment trial kicks off this week for former President Trump. We'll be airing that on one of our two broadcast networks.
That's right. Anyone who can tune in to the NPR News and Music stations or to the stream, because you can listen there as well at WPR.org, will be able to hear a lot of live coverage of that impeachment trial, something that, of course, people on all sides are very curious about. And this is an opportunity to hear history as it unfolds.
And sticking, Mike, with the topic of special programming, we've got some Black History Month specials still to come. What are we looking ahead to?
Coming up later this month, we have two specials from a really great NPR history podcast called Throughline. It's hosted by two young producers. It's Rund Abdel Fattah and Ramtin Arablouei. And first, on Sunday, February 21st at 4 p.m., it's two parts in 1 hour, Billie Holiday and Shirley Chisholm. And the topic is that when Billie Holiday was harassed by U.S. government agents and told to stop singing her very famous and troubling song, Strange Fruit, she refused. And when Shirley Chisholm ran for president and was ridiculed and told she shouldn't aim that high politically, she refused to listen. So two pioneering Black women who set their sights high and never backed down from a fight. Then on Sunday, February 28th at 4 p.m., this is someone I had not heard of, and I look forward to learning more, Octavia Butler, mm-hmm. an award-winning science fiction writer, and some call her the mother of Afrofuturism. And she has alternate realities that reveal striking and often devastating parallels to the world we live in today. And she broke in on the science fiction scene when she knew of no other Black women in the field. And she says she simply had to write herself in. I love that. Yeah. So those are both for Black History Month.
I am a science fiction fan, Mike, but I've read a lot of Octavia Butler's books, but don't know much about her biography. So I'm very curious about this one. I'll probably check that out. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. We've got Jeff with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Bright sunny day up here in northern Wisconsin. I'm in Shell Lake right now, actually. So I'm calling today because I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day. And I actually worked at UWS when I was in college. I met Mike Simonson, and anyway, I really look at the world the way Mike Simonson does when I think of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I think we need to do a better job, in my opinion, of allowing elected representatives access to constituents in Wisconsin. So my suggestion is having one every 2 weeks or once a month, having one of each of the congressmen, one of the eight congressmen, or one of the two senators, on air for an hour or whatever. They could take calls from listeners, and we could all unite as Wisconsinites, you know, instead of the political divide. Because what it concerns me is when I do listen to WPR, I hear so much bias. And it's because, you know, Rob and others interview college professors from other universities outside Wisconsin, some within Wisconsin. But they have a bias, and we don't hear from the other side. So I think we could, you know, if we have one ground, it's common ground, like they said yesterday in the Super Bowl. I think we need to do a Wisconsin thing and bring people together to allow each other to hear the other side, not necessarily be persuaded, but at least access to the other side, so we can have not necessarily debate, but some insightful discussion where we could learn. Because believe me, people on snowmobiles up here, when they go to the bar, they talk about stuff like this. They talk about politics.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Jeff, a regular caller on the show. Mike, always glad to hear from him. So the basic suggestion, kind of a more regular planned schedule for our congressional representatives, we kind of bring them on more ad hoc, Mike, on Central Time and the morning show, for example. What do you think? Regularly scheduled visits from our delegation.
Well, I mean, that is intriguing, but as you know, it can be very difficult to book politicians. And so I don't know that that would work out, although it's interesting. Sort of the broader idea, though, I totally agree with Jeff that the Ideas Network is a place for us to come together and hear from each other. And we strive to do that, and to the extent that we are falling short, I do trust that our listeners hold us to account. And so thank you, Jeff, so much for that thought. And the other challenge we have certainly found is that sometimes when we invite politicians on and they accept, they stay hard onto their talking points. And so the actual new learning doesn't always happen. And so that's something we would monitor for as we do that as well. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. And Mike, we've had some good conversations where here on Central Time, and I know the morning show will bring on a lawmaker from each party, a state lawmaker now I'm talking, but focus on a particular issue like criminal justice or helping rural Wisconsin or things like that. And what I found, at least on a bunch of those, is, you know, about 70% of the time they're on common ground.
Yeah, and it may not feel that way in you know, all of the coverage about how divided we all are. But often that is the case if people take the time to talk with each other.
It's the February edition of Mondays with Mike. We're talking to WPR director Mike Crane about the latest happenings with WPR programming and operations. You can join in at 800-642-1234, and we want to hear about what you want to hear more or less of on Wisconsin Public Radio. Are you a fan of Wisconsin life? Do you have a memorable piece you want to discuss from the first 10 years? And just in general, any questions, concerns, or praises you'd like to share related to Wisconsin Public Radio? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our February edition of Mondays with Mike with WPR Director Mike Crane talking about the latest happenings on and off of the air, including some upcoming programming highlights. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio, your questions, comments, likes, and dislikes. Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Kevin is calling from the Northwoods. Kevin, hi.
Hello, yes. I'm calling to let you know that I think that you guys need to have more. And I know you guys have listened to Mike many times when he's had his segments at the beginning of the month. You guys have hashed this over, but you need to have more segments that are an hour long. Because the fact is that you guys, with your short segments, it boils down to 20 minutes or so. for a segment. And, you know, you guys keep saying, oh, call in, then sometimes you only take one call for the segment. And, I mean, Joy Cardine did it. Catherine Dunham did it. They did it before them. Why can't you guys do it?
Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. And, Mike, of course, that was the norm on the Tom Clark Show, Kathy Dunn, Gene Faraca, one topic, usually one guest for 1 hour. We have moved away from that for the most part.
Yeah, often now it's two topics or maybe even more, and there are a number of things going on. One is that, you know this, Rob, we started Central Time as a production with the belief that there were a lot of topics that weren't getting on the Ideas Network because of the restrictions of the hour-long format. And so that's one of the reasons we've, for now, is it 6 or 7 years we've been doing the shorter segments, particularly on Central Time. The other is that the staff tells me that it has gotten harder to get people to call, and that sometimes that really does seem to mean that maybe the hour is too long. That said, we do some hour-long segments, and particularly these days with all of the extra challenges that everybody in the whole society is facing with, you know, COVID-19 and working in so many different ways, I would say we're doing some more longer segments, although maybe not an hour. So thanks for the call, Kevin, and glad to know you enjoyed all of that stuff that you mentioned.
Kevin, thanks for the call. And, yeah, here on Central Time, we've moved toward more of the half-hour segments, in quotes, because radio half-hours are still a little shorter, fewer than 15, and we actually have been getting more people calling in, which is great, because we love that. Hey,
yeah.
Look, here's another one, Mike. Jacob is with us in Madison. Jacob, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm glad you took my call. I just wanted to respond to the earlier call, and I'm highly in favor of getting professors and scientists and people who actually are studying the topics that we need to learn about. I do think politicians will get on and they get people riled up because they use their talking points, and politicians want to win people over to their sides. I think hearing people that are educated and actually studying topics are the people that can educate us.
Jacob, thanks a lot for the call. Jacob, responding to Jeff's point. Mike, I don't think there's ever a perfect mix, I guess, of guests.
No, I mean, you know this, that every single day, everything we're doing has a little piece of improvisation on it. You know, and just the challenge of taking calls, when it gets going, it can be very exciting. And when you have one of those days where it just feels like no one will call, it's really tough on the staff, and they have to scramble sometimes to think of, well, what do we do now? Because we want the calls. And, you know, it's one reason that we added years ago now the opportunity for people to email in or use social media, all of that to try to make sure people participate.
Which was controversial at the time for some reason. We really had to debate that one out before we started taking those emails. But now we do. And you can email at talk@WPR.org if you want to join the conversation that way, or call in on Mondays with Mike with WPR Director Mike Crane at 800-642-1234 with your questions, thoughts, comments, criticisms of Wisconsin Public Radio, what you hear on it, how it works, whatever. Back to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Milwaukee. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I just had a comment on, I think, the two best shows you got going on your station is the Larry Neeler Show and Mega Chuckleverdy. Those are my two favorite shows, and I listen to NPR all the time, and I'll listen off the air.
Dennis, thanks a lot. Always love to hear people share their favorites, Mike.
Oh, yeah, and I'm with you on liking both shows very much. Very dynamic, lots of really interesting topics, and very different shows, too, which is fun to realize, Dennis, that you know, you're enjoying things that have very different sensibilities about it, and that is part of the Ideas Network.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Well, Mike, seek emails, and you shall find them. Randall emails, why can I get my Google Assistant smart speaker to play the Ideas Network? It always brings up the Classical and News Network. I don't know. Do you know about that, Mike? I know in general a lot of people are listening on smart speakers these days.
Yeah, I do know about some of those problems. one of the things that, you know, even as advanced as we think we are with computers, that happens is sometimes the thinking structure of, and thinking maybe is not the right word, but the way the computer expects to receive your request can really make it challenging. And we do have a short piece of advice there for Google Home voice commands. It's on the same page as all the stuff about Alexa, which is wpr.org/smart. And for the Ideas Network, there is a note that says, this is currently unreliable. We're working with TuneIn on this issue. But the command you would want to use would be to say to, hey, Google, listen to WPR Ideas Network from TuneIn. And so, again, that's there at wpr.org/smart. And we're working on it, and glad to know you're using it.
Well, I'm happy to report, Mike, that my dad in Michigan is successfully able to listen to the Ideas Network on his smart speaker. Hi, Dad, if you're listening right now. Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Stella with us in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I have two requests. The first one is we live in Sturgeon Bay, and I would like, would you please give us some means of accessing, of reporting, like an after-hours emergency number that we can report, because there are many times when the radio goes dead, and it goes dead for a long time, and so we just end up not being able to listen to whatever we're listening to, or sometimes two tracks will start playing at the same, will be playing at the same time, competing, and it's just a mishmash of sound.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
Yeah. And various, you know, various other problems that come up after hours. The only way we can report is to call listener services, which is 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And if you're outside of those hours on Monday through Friday or on the weekend, you're out of luck.
Stella, thanks a lot for the call. Mike, I know about audience services, but she's right. It's not always staffed off hours. And I know we do appreciate our listeners giving a heads up when that bad stuff happens.
Oh, we absolutely do. The challenge is that literally there's no one to call at some times of night. And I know that's frustrating. It's frustrating to us, too. But as we've continued to try, and this is true for all of radio pretty much, is try to maintain as much live as we can. Still, a lot of us have switched to a fair amount of either pre-recorded or live off of a satellite kind of programming, and there's an elaborate automation system that runs almost every radio station in the country right now. And so I know that this isn't so satisfying, Stella, but please do still leave a message for audience services, because we still value the information, and that may help us troubleshoot. Two other things. One is that we do have silence detectors, and so that will send an alarm to our engineers if it's silent. And if it stays silent for a long period of time, that may mean that there's a problem at the transmitter itself that they're working on. And they do have a whole phone tree, so someone gets notified when that happens. And then other than that, just, you know, keep the calls coming so that we know the nature of the problem. And for everybody listening, you want to leave the message with exactly which station and frequency you were listening to, and describe what you heard and what time. And that will be very helpful to the engineers in figuring out the long term.
Thanks a lot for that call. I appreciate it. Well, Mike, once again, this just flew by. Thanks for joining us again.
Always a pleasure. And you're right. It just goes by so fast. Thanks to everybody who called or wrote.
Mike Crane is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He comes on the Ideas Network once a month, either on Central Time, The Morning Show, or The Larry Mueller Show, to talk about WPR programming and operations. The next Mike Crane sighting will be March 1st on The Larry Mueller Show. And if you didn't get a chance to make a comment during this conversation, you can always contact WPR's audience services. Here's the number, 800-747-7444. That's 800-747-7444. Or email listener@wpr.org. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Governor Evers plans to include recreational marijuana legalization in his new budget, while a new White House may change its approach on the issue. We'll get the latest on legalization. Plus, we'll hear the case for reopening schools to in-person education. That and more tomorrow here on Central Time. Back in November, we had a fun conversation about getting motivated to go outside and enjoy winter weather. Well, that motivation is being put to the test during this long cold snap. Central Time producer Bill Martins has been enjoying the winter weather this year. Hey, Bill.
Hey, hey.
Well, you were saying earlier you were a convert, Bill. You used to avoid the outdoors. You've gotten into it. What's come over you?
I think it's the photography. I took that up a few years ago. And there's just something different about going outside and taking pictures when there's snow and ice on the ground. You obviously don't get that kind of look during the rest of the year. So started venturing out and invested in some much more higher-end, warmer clothes so I don't die when I go out there. That's always a nice thing.
Yes,
and now it's just not a big deal. I kind of like it now.
Now, photography, I think, wait, it's cold. Doesn't the lens or whatever fog up? Aren't there photographic issues without getting out in the cold?
Not too bad. My camera handles it pretty well. The only real issue I run into is that the battery, you know, doesn't last nearly as long, so that's a good reason to carry a backup or two if you can. And I always keep that in an inside coat pocket to keep it warm so that when I pop it in the camera, it's not like 30% to begin with. I got a little more juice in there. And the tripod, the lubrication in the tripod gets a little stiff, so it can be hard to tilt and pan and stuff. But other than that, everything still works pretty good.
All right, enjoy it. Look forward to seeing your outdoor images this winter. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.